car. Car. And picking up a pizza is like I got hit with the word of the Lord speaking to me internally. And I don't think that's ever happened before. And the words were this. He said, prepare to pick up survivors. And as soon as I heard that in my spirit, I had a mental picture of the survivors of the Titanic in their little lifeboats after the boat had gone down. And this boat, remember, the Carpathia came and rescued them. But it was like out of the side I saw it wasn't the Carpathia coming in, it was Noah's Ark. And so that's why we've been following in the last months, is God said, prepare to pick up survivors. And knowing what's coming, knowing what we're in, and, you know, he put us on two tracks. One, spiritual preparation, and the other was physical preparation. And he said, prepare, do 95% spiritual preparation and 5% physical preparation. So we haven't really done anything as far as helping people get ready physically. And so that's what this is all about. Every Friday night now from 8 to 8:30, we're going to start to touch on points of physical preparation. And quite frankly, it really bores me. This stuff bores me. In fact, if I fall asleep, I'm hoping somebody will stay awake and wake me up. But it's necessary. You know, listen to this scripture in Psalm 105, talking about Joseph. God called for a famine upon the land. He broke the whole staff of bread. He sent a man before them, Joseph, who was sold as a slave. They afflicted his feet with fetters. He himself was laid in irons until the time that his word came to pass. The word of the Lord purified him. So Joseph, we're all Josephs right now. God's calling us to be Josephs and to prepare, even physically, especially spiritually, but also physically, what we can for what's coming. So I don't know how many people have begun, but some of this stuff can cause hysteria. It's like there's such a volume of stuff to prepare for. Where do I begin? And so it can cause hysteria. But if you just take things in little steps at a time, and not really expect to do everything at once, just do what you can with the finances that you have and what God shows you to do, who He tells you to prepare for, to help. You know, like in our neighborhood, God showed us about four families that we're preparing for. They don't know that yet, but when the time comes, we're gonna help them. And so we're trying to be Josephs. That's the heart of this whole thing. And we're not survivalists, because we know when this stuff happens, it's not about us surviving. It's not about our physical comfort. It's about being evangelists to those around us who aren't preparing, who didn't hear the message. So every Friday night we're going to touch on these subjects. We'll have notes to pass out. And what we've done, we've kind of gone through stuff. There's such a volume of stuff out there. It's like reading a telephone book. But we're trying to cut things down so that we can make it practical for people who maybe haven't started to do stuff like this yet. And so that's what these notes are for. You might want to get a notebook and just start keeping these things in a notebook. One of the things that we're having to fight is, you know, we're growing up in, we're products of the late 20th century, early 21st century, and our mindset is grocery stores, everything's provided for us, you just drive and get it, all the water comes to our home, all the sanitation flows away, and our mindset is geared towards that, so that we're bent in this direction. But our grandparents, great-grandparents, lived in a time when it was the opposite. They had to live near water. They had to grow their own food. They had to store their own food. They had to take care of their sanitation in a different way, et cetera, et cetera. And so our mindset has to be twisted back to what happens in infrastructure failure, infrastructure failure of societies. How do we deal with that? How do we have basic preparation? And so that's one of the things we want to do through this whole thing, is just help adjust our mindset, our thinking process. So we're calling this, I have to read it, prudent preparation and prepositioning of physical provision by prophetic people. And I told Jeff that it's the peas that pass all understanding, because you can't understand all this stuff. But the emphasis is on prudence. We're not trying to build a bunker. So, let's begin. And like I said, if I nod off, please wake me up. And we're going to present this in bullet fashion so that we can just get through it. You need to hear this and then take it home and just kind of go over it for yourself. And we're recording these messages, and we'll have the notes available. So if you miss any time in the next weeks, then it'll be available for you. Okay, so physical preparation for crisis, part one, water. As you know, water is our most basic of physical needs, and we just take it for granted day by day, and especially in our culture. It just comes to our through our tap, to our home, and we don't worry about it. But again, we've seen these disasters happen, and where Joplin, where's the other one? Tuscaloosa, where infrastructure fails because of disaster, and there's emergency need for water, pure water. That's one of the things Terry Bennett said is coming. One, the most important thing is going to is for you to be able to have pure water available to you. So, and it's important to prepare prior to the calamity versus waiting to react after the fact. Just out of curiosity, how many people have made some basic preparation for water storage at home? Just made some small steps. Okay, that's great. So first consideration, our need for water. These are things that we may not think about day by day. So we have the need for water in the application of many of life's activities. Just considering basic needs, the average person will require about 40 gallons of water per month. Per person, 40 gallons. That allows about a half gallon of drinking water per day, a half gallon for hygiene, and extra water for other needs like cooking, growing food, etc. Basic needs. As you can see, we have to dink to replenish our bodily fluids. A little bit of a misprint there. Drinking is important. Cooking for food. Personal hygiene. Bathing, brushing teeth, etc. Sanitation, washing dishes, disposing of waste, and then for growing food. Second consideration, thinking through the potential problem of our shortage of water if we have it. So these are the questions we ask ourselves right now in the place that we live. What are water sources around my house? Where could I obtain water if for some reason the tap is shut off and I don't have availability to just turn on water and have it flow to me? Where's the nearest lake? Where's the nearest stream? Where's the nearest river? Where's the nearest pond? Where can you obtain water if you don't have any water coming to your house? Secondly, have you prepositioned an emergency supply of fresh water to your home? That is, you can place them in food-grade storage barrels. They come in different sizes, from I think 5 gallons to 55 gallons. You can place those in your home and preposition pure water in your home and have it available. They're excellent for long-term storage and for emergency use. Thirdly, do you have the ability to catch water? There are several ways you can catch water around your house. Paul and Jenny have a water barrel that they purchased from Lowe's, and it attaches into your gutters. And so when you have a rainstorm, it flows right into this water barrel, and it's a source of water if you should need it. And another way that you can catch water is you can set up a tarp, an elevated tarp in your backyard, and have a hole in the middle of it, and it falls into the tarp, put a container underneath it, and it'll drain into the container. That's another way to catch water. Just thoughts, you know, we don't think about this stuff. We've never had to. So you have a lake or a stream nearby. How do you transport that water once you go there and get it? You got to think about that. You know, there's collecting points, and you have to take something to the collecting point and then be able to bring the water back. Go to the next slide, Paul. Forgot I had the slides up. That's a standard 5-gallon water container that they use to carry and transport water back and forth. You can stack different sizes from 3 to 7 gallons. I meant to mention too that the book that we had displayed on the first slide was a very good basic book that deals with crisis preparation. It's probably the best that we've had out that we found out there. It's about that thick, covers lots of different subjects, and you can get it on Amazon. By the way, you have the slides in your handout, so you can refer to those at home. Okay, now the big thing, purifying water. You found a water source, you go and get it, you bring it back to your home, or you catch water and you put it in a storage barrel or whatever. That water is not, you can't assume that water is good to drink or good for your hygiene use. How do you purify the water? One of the ways that you can purify this water so that you don't drink it and get sick or die as a result of it. Of course, there can be organisms in it. Cows like to wade in streams, et cetera, et cetera. I don't have to elaborate on that. There could be pesticides that have been placed in the streams, fertilizer. All, you know, the Eastman may have dumped something in there. It's not the purest, not to mention names, but you can't assume that water is pure. I read a story recently about an incident in World War II where it was actually at the Battle of Peleliu, where these guys were dropped on the beach and they were fighting for their lives. It was hot, humid. They had no water supply with them, and they were taking ground and waiting for them to bring the water supply up to them. And they were dehydrated massively. And finally, they brought the water buffalo up with the water in it, and they put their canteens under it, poured out the water, and it was black. What had happened was somebody had cleaned out the inside of those tanks with an oil product. And they forgot to clean out the oil product, and then they just filled it with water. And these guys are looking at this, you know, what do I do? And they ended up drinking it. They survived, but they had to have water. But you don't want to get in a situation like that. You want to have pure water available. First way you can purify your water, you can boil it. You can cook those little organisms to death. Take about 3 to 5 minutes to purify water by boiling it. It'll kill bacteria and other harmful organisms. However, it doesn't remove chemical contaminants that are non-volatile, and it doesn't remove the sediment that might be in there, so you have to consider that. There may be another way to get that out. Chemical disinfection. You can put chemicals in impure water and purify it. And the positives is that most organisms can be killed by this method, with the exception of there's some flukes, some worms that aren't killed by it. So you're at risk a little bit for certain types of flukes if you just use chemical disinfection. Negatives, and there can be a strong chemical odor and taste from the chemical that you put in the impure water. The two most common ones that they use are iodine. And this iodine comes in various forms, but the most common form is in tablets. You can drop the tablet in this a certain volume of water, and it will kill the organisms that are in it. However, if you have an allergy to iodine, you can't use this method. You'll drink your water, but you'll die from allergy. Second chemical disinfection ability is with chlorine, basic Clorox. And you want to use the regular unscented bleach. You know, it's nice for water to smell good, but it isn't helpful. It's the regular Clorox, the 5 to 6% brand. Clorox has a 2-year shelf life, so if you have Clorox on your shelf that's older than 2 years, it's not going to be very effective. Now, how much Clorox do you put in impure water? You can use from 8 to 16 drops to treat 1 gallon of water. And they say 8 to 16, if it's real clear water, then you can use 8 drops. If it's real turbid water, real cloudy water, you better use 16 drops. A little more oomph. Or you can use one half to 1 teaspoonful to treat 5 gallons. For example, if you have those containers that I was talking about, if you have a 5 gallon container, you would put either 1/2 teaspoonful if it's clear water, or 1 teaspoonful if it was pretty cloudy water. But they say to take note, because chlorine loses some of its effectiveness if the water is cold and alkaline. So it's not as effective at killing organisms if it's cold or alkaline. Okay, then the third way that we take care of this impure water is through mechanical filtering. So there's various units out there that are on the market, and they use basically, they're all kind of the same, but they use, because they use 3 different types of filtering to take care of the organisms and the chemicals that are in the water. The first type of filter is a ceramic filter. The ceramic filter is basically used to kill organisms. They kill lots of organisms. Not every organism, but they kill lots of organisms. So it's really the workhorse of these mechanical filtering systems.
Filters, right.
It takes them out so that you don't drink it. The second type of filtering process is through activated carbon. And this activated carbon kills a few organisms, takes care of a few organisms, but not many. But on the other hand, it will take out chemicals. So that's the benefit of the activated carbon. And so those are 2 different kind of filtering processes. And then the third thing that they've done is they've combined a filter that has ceramic as well as carbon. So let's kind of read through this. The ceramic filters, again, filter out most organisms, but do not filter out chemicals or heavy metals. The activated carbon filters filter out chemicals and heavy metals, but only filter out a few organisms. They must be, and the carbon ones, the weakness in those is that they have to be changed a lot more frequently than the ceramic. Same thing, now the combination filters, they do it all, but they must be replaced much more frequently than, say, just the plain ceramic. You have to replenish the carbon part of them. Is that confusing? So, in talking to some of these companies, and seeing what missionaries take with them to the field, basically they really emphasize taking ceramic filters. That's the key. That's the workhorse. And so the ceramic filters are really, that's really the key. Having some type of ceramic component. Okay, another consideration in this mechanical filtering is, what size unit do you need? There's 2 different types of units according to the size that you need. There's portable units that can be carried easily, and basically they can serve from 1 to 4 persons by using these portable units. Okay, the first portable unit that we'll talk about is the Katadyn pocket filter. Paul, go back 2 slides. I think you right-click on that. Okay. This is really an excellent, it's about this big. And you basically pull water from the stream, goes through the filter, and it goes out into your container. One ceramic filter can filter up to 13,000 gallons. You can really pull a lot of water through this filter before it has to be changed out. But it's kind of a slow process. It can only put out about 1 quart per minute. Second type of filter is the Katadyn combi filter. Obviously it's a combination filter. It has a ceramic and a activated carbon component. And it works basically like the first one, except the water goes through the activated carbon, and you get a lot more chemicals taken out, and the water tastes a lot better. So that's a consideration. comfort in crisis, you have to have good water tasting. But the problem is that, that activated carbon portion of it, only you have to change it about every 500 gallons. Whereas the ceramic part will pull 13,000 gallons. So if you want to, you know, you could, if you ran out of the carbon portion of it, it would still be effective, you know, with the ceramic portion, but it just wouldn't take out the chemicals, and the water would not taste that good. You just have to keep replenishing that carbon. And then there's another kind called the Lifesaver 4000, Lifesaver 6000. This is, I think the military uses these a lot, don't they, Ann? Afghanistan. Now these have a combination filter in them as well. And you can treat about 12 gallons per hour. It's pretty fast. But their filter capacity is only, for the 4000 model, it's only 1000 gallons, and you have to change the filter. The 4000, you have a capacity of 1500 gallons. So there's limitations there with that. But it's really a really great portable unit. Prices on these, you know, you can Google these, check on Amazon. I have a list at the end of that you can use to kind of research these. But the Katadyn pocket filter runs about $315. They're going up in price, by the way, because people are jumping on board with preparation since Japan and since these tornado incidents. The Katadyn Combi filter runs about, I think it was about 200? 150? Okay, it's about 150. The Lifesaver 4000 and the Lifesaver 6000, about 179, about 170. Okay, now, those were the small units, the portable units. And those would work well in your home, by the way. They're just slower, and you just have to take that into consideration. Now, there's another aspect, or another type called base units. These are mainly built for a base camp. You know, they're going to handle larger amounts of water, be a bigger reservoir for a bigger group of people. So Paul put up the Katadyn TRK drip water filter. Go back. Okay, this one sits about that tall. There's an upper reservoir that you pour in the impure water, and it has the filters in it, and it drains into a lower reservoir where you collect the pure water, and then there's a spigot out the side that you drain out the pure water. In with the bad, out with the good. And the specs on this, okay, you can get ceramic filters for it that last 13,000 gallons per 13,000 gallons per filter. And they have you can put three in there. So you put three in there, you've got a capacity for 39,000 gallons. That'll take care of an army. They also have combination ceramic and activated filters as well, but they don't last as long, like I said. Now these will filter up to 1 gallon per hour if you use those three filters. But if you use the combination filter, the lifespan of those, no matter how many gallons you put through it, is only 6 months. So that's a consideration. Okay, then the next one is the Big Berkey. It's a different company, but it's still the same principle. You can get either ceramic or combination ceramic activated carbon filters for it. Now this one will filter up to about 3.5 gallons per hour if you configure it with two filters. I think is it four, you can put four filters in there, Judy? Four, yeah. You can put four filters. You don't have to put four filters in, but you can put four filters in, and it will filter 3.5 gallons per hour, but with just two filters. So about the same storage capacity as a Katadyn. And each combination filter has a life of about 3,000 gallons, depending on the level of water contamination. It's low level, you're going to get 3,000 gallons worth of purification through it. But if it's more turbid water, more contaminated water, it's not going to go quite as far. So if you have four filters at 3,000 gallons, you can get about 12,000 gallons with four filters. Okay. Somebody wake me up. Let's see. The next consideration, prices on those. The price of the Katadyn is about $250. About $250. And the big Berkey is about, I think it's a little more expensive. $350? It's about $350 for the big Berkey. And I think those are a little harder to find right now. The Katadyn are pretty easy to find. Next consideration. Okay, you've purified your water. How are you going to store it? Okay, so the supply line is coming back on board. So she said the big Berkeys are easy to get right now. Again, let's go back to storage of water. You can store water in small or moderate-sized containers for portability or large containers for fixed storage. We talked about the 55-gallon food-grade buckets. And really, you can get those, but you probably have to Google those and see where you can find a source. I know that you can get them in Knoxville. There might be some places around here that sell...
Asheville
might have...
It's food grade.
But Bill said you can get them. Bill said you can get them at. So there are some sources. About how much? 35.
I looked up the one there. That's not hard to spigot.
So you don't have to have the spigot on it. You can have a siphon pump. Get about a 60-inch siphon pump that'll just pull the water out for you into a container. But they also sell some that are have been used like for storing for you for syrup, stuff like that, and then they resell them, and you can clean those out, and they're real. That's what we got back in 2000, and they're excellent. Okay. Water stored for any appreciable length should be conditioned by adding 1 teaspoonful of regular Clorox per 5 gallons. We talked about that. Water should be stored so that it will not freeze. That would be a bonehead thing that I would pull. I'd put my barrel outside, it'd be full of water, and I'd come out and it'd be broken because of ice. So you got to think about those things. Water should be stored in an area with as little light as exposure as possible to reduce the chance of algae growth. So the darker the place you can store it, the better. And then you should sample the water about every 3 to 6 months. If it looks dark, if it smells bad, tastes bad, or is cloudy, you should replace it. The water that we've stored in our barrels, we usually replace it about every year. Then I mentioned about having an inexpensive siphon pump. Let's see, I don't have a barrel that shows that. But anyway, you can get those just about anywhere. They're about $10 to $20. Okay, then you got to think, there's other areas in your house where you might have water available. You know, your hot water heater, your toilet tanks, not the bowl, the tanks. The bathtubs, you can put water in there. So that's the basic. That's the basics on water. But here's the thing: if we end up in a situation like that, we have to change our whole mindset to one of conservation, because water is just free flowing right now. We don't even think about showering, for bath refilling the tub. Oh, it feels so good. Yeah. But David Paulson gets lots of revelation when he takes long baths. So, I don't know what he would do in crisis. But you have to think conservation. And yet, we don't know how long our supply will be needed or how long it'll go for. So you have to be sure not to carelessly use it or waste it. So the following questions should be considered. What uses of water require purified water? What uses do not require purified water? So you can conserve your purified water that way. How can the use of pure water be minimized for cooking, personal hygiene, growing food, and for sanitation? Some of the books they talk about, you know, in these situations when there's not a lot of water available, the best thing to do is you don't shower, you just basically wipe down, and not very frequently. About once every week, it's better. You actually end up cleaner that way when you have to do it that way. So I haven't tested that yet. So the final thing, as our eyes are flittering, is this last slide here, the sources for products. Amazon, of course, is an excellent source to start. You get information from them. There's another place called Lehman's for emergency essentials. Another company called Emergency Essentials. You can just Google these and go right to them. Ready-Made Resources. And this is a group that's down in Teleco Plains near Sweetwater. So they actually have an on-site place you can go and look at their stuff. And there's another place called NitroPack Preparedness Center. So that's water.